let's say good evening to Paul Mears.
Good evening to you, Larry. Good evening to all football fans, and welcome to another edition of Penalty Spot in association with the Barbados Football Association. Well, coming up on today's program, the BFA's referees manager, Mark Bob Ford, comes in to talk about the proposed amendment for 5 substitutes instead of the regular 3. Our star player is former national goalkeeper Horace Prickle Stout. And in the club corner, we head to St. George as we feature Ellerton. And of course, we'll have the latest news from the European leagues as action resumes. Yes, action resumes in Germany. This is the Penalty Spot in association with the Barbados Football Association. And welcome back to the program. So great to have you with us again for another edition of Penalty Spot. And of course, lots has been happening off the field, but over the last couple of days, over the last weekend, we had some action on the field, believe it or not, despite the COVID lockdown. First out of the blocks was the Bundesliga in Germany, and some of the stories coming out of that. And the story coming out today says that the Bundesliga players will be reminded of their return to play guidelines before next weekend's matches after Hertha Berlin's players ignored them during Saturday's 3-0 win at Hoffenheim. The German Football League has already said that Hertha will not be punished for their celebrations. However, Bundesliga International Chief Executive Robert Klein says the guidelines need to be followed. And there were some clear guidelines, according to them, in the hygiene concept. The guideline is to celebrate within the social distancing rules. One can imagine, at the height of a goal being scored, that maybe sometime the players will get closer. I can see that could be a difficult one. The clubs are working actively with the players. They speak to them every day to remind them of what needs to be done to ensure they earn their right to a second match day on the third and to finish this season. Klein regards the opening weekend of post-COVID-19 top-flight football in Germany. Well, despite the problems yesterday, he calls it a success. Despite concerns, he has not been informed of any groups of fans gathering in significant numbers at stadiums or city centers to watch the matches. Klein has not been informed of any positive COVID-19 tests around games. While the weekly meeting with clubs will go ahead as normal, he's not aware of any issue that will be threatened the next round of matches and the midweek games after that, which includes Borussia Dortmund's encounter with Bayern Munich. That game comes up next week, Tuesday. Let me say good evening to Kenneth.
Good evening, Paul.
Good evening to you, Kenneth. And we will be joined by Curtis Hines shortly. Kenneth, finally, some action on the field, but some concerns there by the Bundesliga. We can expect when a guy scores a goal, he must celebrate. It will take a little bit, I guess, to adjust to it.
Especially for people that have not scored any goals for the past maybe 4 to 6 weeks. You know, but I mean, I was listening to your news. It's pretty odd that you stand side by side to defend free kicks, but you cannot celebrate goals.
Interesting.
You know, I mean, like we discussed the last time I was on air, the bottom line is all about money. You know, they're just trying to make up the rules as they move ahead to make sure that the authorities, the government, is not unhappy with them, with the way they are going about their business, and, you know, they're not looking out of step with the rest of the society. So it's interesting, and, you know, some people didn't really enjoy the football, but a lot of us did. It was good to have live football on TV, but you could see some slackness in some of the teams that displayed their game last weekend.
Well, one guy who I think might have enjoyed it, he's been starved for some football, Curtis Hines. Good evening, Curtis.
A very good evening to you, Paul. A very good evening to all of our listeners on Penalty Spot. Yes, indeed, Bundesliga action back off and running, and the usual suspects doing quite well in the Bundesliga. Good to see football resuming. And, of course, everyone now will await the results of the testing, which is sure to come as we try to ensure that everyone is being been safe and there's been no fallout. In terms of the results, they got underway with six games on a Saturday. Borussia Dortmund were the big winners. 4-0 over Schalke. Wolfsburg got a 2-1 win over Augsburg. And there were also wins for Hertha Berlin and a team, Paul, I can't pronounce the name. Don't even try that. There was a number of draws as well. On Sunday, Cologne and Mainz played with a 2-2 draw. Bayern Munich, the leader of the defending champions, they beat SC Union Berlin by a 2-0 margin. And there was also a game today, believe it or not, Bayer Leverkusen getting past Werder Bremen 4-1. And, of course, Bayern Munich still leading the league as the Germans, the first ones out of the blocks, or in terms of resuming action. In England, the Premier League said it will support a trophy presentation for Liverpool if they're crowned champions. And this is a big and, it is safe to do so. Of course, there are some serious concerns about the post-trophy parade. Normally attracts thousands of fans, depending on whichever club wins it. And with Liverpool not winning the club title now for, over 20 years, I think it is. It's a huge crowd. But
I think Curtis Kenneth may have had his ticket booked early.
Yes, because I had my ticket booked, and this was meant to be the parade. I was meant to be there. I had everything booked. I was lucky to get my refund from British Airways. But
time will tell, Kenneth. Good to have you stay forever.
It's painful.
Safety first.
It's painful.
You can throw a party with your guys here, man.
Yeah. But they say yes, if it is any way possible to do it, Liverpool will have their opportunity to parade. In terms of what happened today in England, the Premier League clubs, given the go-ahead to resume training tomorrow. Of course, this is social distance training, Kenneth. So, we're still expected to be 6 feet apart. No tackling allowed. So, this is basically drills, I would imagine, jogging, stretching. I guess it's stage one of the road back. But for me, still a long, long road if you're going to get the Premier League up and running. On the plus side, however, training can begin tomorrow. In terms of what is happening in Spain, the La Liga clubs got the go-ahead to resume training today. I'm told that, in fact, yes, they did get the go-ahead to resume training today, and a number of clubs did that. In Italy, however, they got the go-ahead as well, but that didn't turn out to happen as there's still some issues with the government and how the information is being interpreted. In Ireland, as we move quickly, Hearts are threatening legal action under what they describe as the unjust relegation from the Scottish Premiership. Of course, the Scottish League has been called off. Hearts set to be relegated as Celtic crown the champions, and the Hearts are saying we're going to court. That's always going to happen, and many people think that will happen in England if the season comes to premature end. And also in England, the public health authorities have made it clear that the social situation in terms of no fans in crowds, no fans in the stands, I should say, and the distancing for players and fans is not expected to change for the next 6 months to a year. So the reality which we have become accustomed to for football is about to be dramatically altered for foreseeable future. Also in England, they're saying that they have this fast and spice ball and Kenneth to each one of the training facilities beginning tomorrow to ensure that all of the clubs are indeed training individually and no one is cheating the system in an effort to gain an unfair advantage ahead of the proposed restart and to make sure everyone is behaving well. So the Premier League authorities are sending spice to each of the 20 clubs in an effort to make sure that the rules are being adhered to. Pep Guardiola was in Spain. Following the passing of his mum, unfortunately due to the coronavirus, he's making his way back to England as he comes to get green light to resume training in small groups. And it's troubling news for Chelsea. Their winger, the young England player Callum Hudson-Odoi, was arrested yesterday on an alleged rape charge. He's been released on bail and set to go back to court next month. And his representative has said that site is innocent and it is proven in the court of law, and they will have no other comment at the time. It surrounds an incident where a woman that said she was going to the house home after they met online, and later on she was called. So at the very least, he's guilty of breaking the social distancing rules, and Callum Hudson-Odoi joins the long list of footballers in the league found himself in trouble following this social distancing. But really unfortunate allegations for all involved, and here we have what will happen in the law.
Is Kenneth still with us?
Yes, I'm right here.
I've had a few questions in regard to the European leagues, the efforts that they're making to get the action restarted. Most of the comments that I've been hearing from some football fans is that they're pushing it a bit too much. What do you think, Kenneth?
Of course, they are pushing it a bit too much. But you know, like I said, if you look at when you look at what is the motivation for pushing it, it's money.
Money, yeah.
And the government, you know, the big government understand the importance of football and football money to their economies. Just imagine those large clubs. Imagine how many people they employ and the amount of auxiliary businesses that they support. So it's all about money. And where is the money coming from? These football clubs are rich based on basically the large sums of money that they get from broadcasters. If you look at the news that Curtis shared earlier about the Scottish League, like we discussed a few weeks ago, there's going to be some people that are going to be happy with the decision and some people are going to go to court. Some people have lawyers. Everyone has lawyers waiting for the decision to go against them, and they will be in court immediately to, seek some kind of relief. So where's the money factor coming from? The Scottish League has declared Celtic the champions. Congratulations to them. I'm very happy that Celtic has been declared champions because it is sort of a small example of what is going to happen when eventually Liverpool are declared champions. Celtic and their fans are celebrating as if it's Kropova and New Year and Christmas Day mixed together. They do not care about what is happening. But the next line was that the money due to the Scottish football clubs, £7 million, will now be shared. So, you know, they wanted to get to that point where they can share the rest of the money. For the English League and the other large league, they owe their broadcasters a certain number of games. I believe the English Premier League owes their broadcasters, I think, 47 games out of the 92 games. If you're not going to produce those 47 games, I think they were due to cough up £1 billion. So, understand the motivation.
Staggering amount.
Yeah, it's money. You know, and a lot of clubs, and again, one-third of the clubs in the United Kingdom, only one-third of the clubs in the United Kingdom in the English League pyramid can survive without the monies coming from broadcasters. So without those monies trickling down, a lot of clubs will go bust. So they are really pushing it in order to pocket that money that they require to sustain themselves. Remember, there will be no fans until that period. And again, from the estimation, there might be no fans until next year. So they're doing the very best to pocket that money.
The English league, though, seems to be having the most difficulty in kind of kickstarting theirs.
True. But, you know, when you think of the bottom clubs, you know, when you think of the clubs at the bottom, they are not as rich as the top six. They need that money. Even if they're going to be relegated, they want to make sure that the TV revenues due to them, you know, because that's why a lot of clubs are against, you know, playing on neutral grounds. There were some games that were meant to be TV games for those clubs. They want that money, and, you know, they would like to collect that money no matter what the eventuality is, no matter if they're going to be relegated or not.
And Kenneth, it's an unfortunate situation for all involved. There was a story earlier online today saying a top Premier League club official had demanded that if the players refuse to train, because as we've been hearing, quite a few of them actually, are still not in favour of this rapid resumption of a training as they look to build towards the games. They still have some concerns. He's saying, though, that if the players don't train, they shouldn't be paid because, as you said, everyone is looking after the money. The fans can't come back because the protocols are still in place. The players don't want to train because the protocols are, as far as they're concerned, being ignored. The league wants the games to go ahead because they don't want to pay back the TV money. And, of course, the sponsors, they would want their money's worth. It's a real a whole mess.
It is. But remember, not everyone is earning £50,000 a week in the Premier League.
Correct.
Some people are earning, you know, basic wages. Some people are on $10,000, some people are on $5,000 in the Premier League. So, and for those people that are earning large sums of money and they are comfortable, they can say, hey, I'm concerned about my welfare, you know, and I don't want to participate. It's all well and good, I don't want to participate, but, you know, the players that do not earn a month are eager to get back there, you know, and, you know, recuperate the income that they've lost so far. So, eventually, everyone has, you know, the clubs, every single club has their own agenda, different agendas. Liverpool's agenda is very different from Man City's agenda. I don't know if I've explained Arsenal's agenda to you. A lot of Arsenal fans want the league cancelled.
I wonder why that is.
Interesting to, you know, to get to hear their reasoning. They want the league cancelled. Not that they do not like Liverpool, but that's just second on the list. But number one is that they want the league cancelled, so they wanted the league declared null and void. Why? If you declare the league null and void, that would obscure their current position of 8th or 9th position. But you then have to fall back upon last season's table to declare your European representatives. Arsenal finishing 5th last season, their fans feel like that if Man City's ban is effective, they'll be promoted to the top 4. So you can see everyone has their own agenda.
But I'm sure that the leagues will continue to develop. We're going to have lots more stories coming out of those leagues. I'm sure we'll keep our eyes on the developments in England and see what's happening also in the other leagues, Spanish league in Italy and so on. So final words from you, Kenneth?
Well, I mean, with respect to the German league, it was very important that they went first. You can see the organization. You know, even before the game started, you could see the way they went about putting balls in strategic positions so you didn't need ball boys. You could see the way that they went about their substitutions. You could see the way they went about the seating arrangements. And apart from the flaw with the celebration, I think it was Hertha Berlin, you know, they pretty much carried on in a very, very, I mean, their machines, they carried on very well. They're a good experimental side to early adopters to go first. And it was very important that, you know, they were able to execute. And we now wait for results of, you know, coronavirus testing after those round of games. But the rest of the league, the Italians, the English, the Spaniards, they will all be watching carefully. And I'm sure that they'll want to copy or improve upon what the Germans have done. So kudos to the Germans for their first game of first day of football. And we look forward to more great football. And I mean, the football was great. So I don't mind that there were no fans. I'm enjoying the football.
Okay, Kenneth, thanks a lot for joining us and taking us around the European leagues. Certainly, we'll keep an eye on that in the upcoming week. We have been moved toward next on the program, our star player segment. And our star player this week is the former Barbados goalkeeper, Horace Brigglestout. Good evening to you, Horace.
Hi, good evening to Paul and Curtis in the studio and all the football fans across Barbados. Just so everybody's staying safe and sound.
Oh, welcome to Penalty Spot. Great to have you on this evening.
Yes, it's always a pleasure to be on Penalty Spot.
But I'm going to start right away by taking you way back. Looking at your career, let's go back some years now. How did it all start for you? How did football start for you?
Well, you know, it would start from your village where, like, I'm from Portersville in the Haynesville area. And you always start as young boys there. Someone take on the responsibility to coach a group of young lads from the area and eventually hope to improve their skills to go on to be successful at some point. You know, so that's where it started from, Hordersville Pastor.
And how did that evolve? You eventually would have played, well, you played most of your local career for the Haynesville Club. I know you had a stint, I believe you would have had a stint with Ellerton also?
Not really. How I started from Hordersville, you know, when you're playing with your community, players that you grow up with, you know, your family and friends, you don't want to leave. You don't want to leave the club, right?
Mm-hmm.
And by that time, the club wasn't. It was a third division club at that time, and it wasn't going anywhere at the moment. And I could remember my coach telling me that at my age, I'm one of the best young goalkeepers in the island, and I should be playing at a higher level, which was first division level at that time. And being a youngster, you ain't gonna see that. You ain't gonna see that what he was seeing. So I remember he told me he would find a club for me, which he founded Empire Club. They were a big established club in terms of cricket, hockey, and football.
Mm-hmm.
And they always give youngsters a break. So I remember that first Sunday morning, turning at Empire. I was very nervous. And to be honest, from there, my career just took off, you know, because it went from Empire, when I was established at Empire, then from Empire, I moved on to BDF, when they started the program in 1991. And then from BDF, I turned professional, had a full professional contract with Scottish side called Livingston FC, you know, and then after about 4 years in Scotland, I've got a serious career-threatening injury that I lost my contract due to that injury, and I came back to Barbados sadly, and then got some treatment and stuff, but the knee wasn't the same, but I kept on playing on it for a couple of years because I went on to join Gawhill after I came back off of my contract and spent 2 years at Gawhill, and that's when I came back then to Haynesville back in 99, between 99 and 2000 season. I came back to give back something to my community team, Haynesville, and they won the first division cup that year to get promoted back to Premier League.
Before we go to your national performance, I want to take you back to Scotland playing for Livingston. How did that stint come about, and what was the experience like there in Scotland?
Well, I was playing at the time. I was playing for the semi-professional team, Lambada,
right?
Our local semi-professional team that was coached by the Englishman Kevin Millard.
That's right.
And Lambada, we played in the Caribbean Professional League, which we did well. We won our rounds and we went on to the actual finals that was played in Miami. You know, we played against Mexico top team at the time, Necaxa, that had in a couple of Mexican internationals, and played against, I think, a Honduras team, and then another team from El Salvador or someplace. But we didn't do too well in the finals, but we showed that we had some talent on the team. And I remember Kevin came up to me after I played against Necaxa. Kevin came up to me and told me that we have to go dinner. And when I went to dinner, I see these white guys, you know, and was introduced to them. And eventually they were from Scotland and they were interested in me as a goalkeeper. And they invited myself along with three others up for trials. That was in December 1994. You know? So it was myself along with Wayne Sobers, Dave Valline, and Llewellyn O'Reilly. And due to the work permit situation, they could only sign two at the time. You know, so it was myself and Dave Valline. We got the contracts, you know, and we went on to, at least, the team was in relegation zone at that time, and they got relegated by the time we got the work permits. But the next year, we came back, we won the third division league and went straight back up to second division. So I was glad because I got a distinction to have a winner's medal in Scotland.
You came back, Horace, and you would have gone into the Barbados team. You'd have played in the World Cup qualifiers. Well, tell us about that.
Well, the World Cup qualifiers, I think that was the best and the furthest Barbados has probably went in the competition in terms of the World Cup qualifiers in history. They went as far as the semifinal round, and I guess at that time a lot of people didn't expect us to get that far because it was always when you had our Jamaica, the stronger teams in the Caribbean, well, that was it for you. But I think we did well in the Caribbean rounds, and the hardest team at the time was Cuba. And I can remember when we played in Cuba, my shoulder came out before the game, and it was 5 minutes before kickoff. My shoulder slipped out, and Horace Beckles was trying to make a decision quick, and management was telling him Horace can't play. He got to play the other keeper, and Tobacco was always a strong-headed guy, so he went and got two Cuban doctors at the time, and they came, and one put a sling around my hand, and the other one pulled it the other way, and his shoulder went right back, and I told Tobacco, are you playing? You know, don't mind the management. And Tobacco told me, give me it, pull it very rough, and he said, Brigo playing. Brigo could be in a wheelchair. He got to play. and luckily, to play that game. I mean, that was one of my games in my career. It drew 1-1, you know. But you can't ask any guys. It was one of my best games of my career.
You've been over Costa Rica. That must have been a memorable one.
But that would be the most memorable because Costa Rica normally makes the World Cup out of the CONCACAF region with players like Paulo Anchop. He was Manchester City top striker at the time. He had Hernan Medford and a couple of other guys that played professionally all around the world. And to be honest, it was a hard game. And to beat Costa Rica at home in Barbados, I will never forget that moment, man. It will always go down in history as one of my best results internationally, you know. You can only talk about it now, you know. And I kept, those names I just called, Paulo and Chop, and them, he didn't even score in both legs. Because when we went back to Costa Rica, the atmosphere was very intimidating. I mean, the stadium, probably around 29,000 to 30,000 people, probably some of the most people you probably played in front. And the atmosphere... And the atmosphere was very intimidating. I mean, even when we were going in at halftime, during the game, I mean, the fans started to spit down, and the spit came down like rain.
Whoa.
Honestly, like rain, and we ran in the dressing room, but then they had to, the second half, when we were coming back out, they had to get a shoot to come straight onto the field so we could walk straight onto the field. And their fans were right behind the goal bar, hitting me with coins and stuff. But we got beat 3-0 in the end. But it was another good performance from myself and the guys. And I could say that I denied the great Paulo Anchop from Manchester City in both legs.
Excellent. Finally, Horace, looking around football now, what would you say is the standard of goalkeeping that you're seeing?
Well, I always believe in every era of football, there's always good and great players. I don't knock players. Yeah, people might say football is probably at a higher standard and level in our time or even before my time and competitive, which I could agree with, you know, but this era, they have a couple of young goalkeepers that are up to standard, you know, but it's just that probably more dedication. I think they're dedicated also, you know, but something's missing. I can't really say out of football, but I recognize like the BDF goalkeeper, I think his nickname is Colin Pot. He's probably regarded as probably the best local keeper now at the moment, and I have seen some games with him, and he reminds me of myself sometimes. You know, he's big and strong and imposing, and he have qualities can go far along with the other young goalkeepers coming up.
I have a question coming in. I thought this was the last one. Question just coming in for you from one of the fans. They're asking you to say a little bit about their St. Leonard's experience.
It's St. Leonard's? Right. St. Leonard's always had a history of top footballers passing through St. Leonard's, you know, like Paul Griffith. I think the great Anthony Daisy Clark, he went. They also, Roger Yaya, Canada. There's a lot of names of good players. And they always, I remember in my time going to school, but CP at the time was a top rival too. And to be honest, I never beat CP yet, especially down Kojan Parry. And I remember when Robin Paris made his goalkeeping, he's the guy that mostly known for cricket, but he could have played any sport at the time at St. Leonard's, right? And he made his debut for St. Leonard's when I decided not to play for the school that year. Mm-hmm. Played third division for Order Hill. So I remember Kojan Parry beat us in the knockout final 3-0 with Robin goalkeeping. Not that it was his fault, cause I think Robin was a great goalkeeper also. So the guys then decided to ask me to play. They used to have the champions then, like the knockout final winners against the league winners, you know. So the guys asked me to go keep, and they asked Robin then, and Robin could have played on the outfield too. But then the then headmaster, Colvin Holt, said that it'll be up to Robin if he want me to play or not. Because I didn't play for the season. But then they decided that I would play in that finals, and we beat Kojan Parry on penalties. I remember Joe 1-1, and we beat them on penalties. So St. Leonard's always had a good football team, and in terms of winning titles in Barbados and stuff. I will always remember they got a school picture in the hall when we first went playing him there. We first sponsored St. Leonard's, and when you look at that picture and see how bony he was, and I remember it wasn't this dry fit gear; it was like cloth material, you know. Looking back at that picture, you know, is to see the players now in their nice Nike and Puma gear and thing. When you look back, you get a good laugh about it.
The Horace, we want to thank you very much for joining us this evening. We really enjoyed looking back with you. And let me say thanks for all the service that you've given to Barbados football.
Yes, I appreciate it. No problem.
Thanks a lot. That's our former national goalkeeper, Horace Stout, and we want to thank him very much for sharing us, being our star player on this evening's penalty spot. Upcoming, we go to the BFA's referees manager, Mark Bob Ford. We have some technical things to talk about. Good evening, Bob.
Yeah, hi, Paul. Good evening to everyone.
Good evening. Welcome to the show. Good evening. Curtis will be joining us in this segment. Good evening again, Curtis.
Yes, good evening to you, Paul. Good evening, Bob. And, of course, the biggest story in terms of the technical amendments coming out of the COVID-19 pandemic is news that FIFA has now had a proposed amendment for 5 substitutes to be allowed instead of the regular 3, given that coming back from a long break, this would assist in terms of the players who would not be fully fit as they try to get themselves back in gear. The majority of the European leagues have about 9 match weekends of play left. Good evening to you, Bob. Tell us about the thinking, the logic behind this decision.
Yeah, well, gentlemen, I think what FIFA have done is they have made a temporary amendment to Law 3, the player, specifically under the player will be substitutions, to allow member associations who want to introduce five substitutions to the end of the season if they restart, that they will be given that right to do so. The International Football Association board have agreed to it to the ending of the particular season. They will look at it again after the season is finished to see if it is something that they can introduce again for 2021 or if it can become a permanent part of the laws of the game. I think the thinking is primarily to give teams more opportunity to use players, because with the restart of their particular seasons, they will have a shorter time span to finish the season, and therefore it will give them the opportunity to utilize more players, because they may be playing more games within a short space of time, and you still want the quality of the football to be good, and you still want the safety of the players to be looked after. And I think it was a positive move for FIFA to allow this to happen.
Bob, I think I remember reading somewhere that two of the substitutions would have to be made during the break halftime, so we don't have the game being drawn up too much. Is this correct?
No, that is not correct. The law allows that you can make the five substitutes. What they have done is to indicate that so the game will not be slowed up, our time will not be wasted. You still have a team would have been allowed three substitutes. You are now three substitutes in a game will take three stoppages for one team. So they are going to make individual substitutions. So they have allowed that to happen. But what they have told you is that if you're not going to make substitutions at halftime, because you can still make substitutions at halftime and still have those three slots to get in your remaining subs. So if you don't make substitutions at halftime, you still have five subs to make, but you will have to make these five subs within three stoppages. So at some point in time, you will have to make double subs and a single sub if you're going to make the three subs with the three stoppages.
Oh, thanks for the clarification. So
right.
To confirm,
so
the
halftime, you can make your subs at halftime, but you still have those three stoppages within the game to make the remaining subs.
To make the remainder of the spots.
Yes.
So to confirm, if you do get a resumption of Premier League action in Barbados, then we would be able to put this rule into place.
If the BFA wants to, that will be a decision made by the National Association. If the National Association want to introduce it, they can. If the National Association want to continue with the rules that they have started the season with to finish off the season, they can also do that as well. So it will be left up to the National Association to determine if they will take up this new amendment.
Okay, a bit of a tricky question to answer, but you're capable and put you on a bit. We saw an issue today, one Premier League club coach saying that he would prefer if the season was scrapped, given all of the uncertainty, training and safety and whatnot. Has there been any feedback from any of the referees thus far about their thoughts of football coming out of the pandemic?
You know, referees are here to service the game of football. And once that decision, because that decision as the F football will restart or not, will lie with the president and the board. They will decide if the season will continue, under what conditions the season will continue. Obviously, looking at the safety of the players and the staff and those who will be around the restart of the season if it do restart. So once that decision is made, I'm pretty sure that all safety elements will be put in place for the referees. The referees are here to service the sport. So once safety is the optimum, which I know it would be, for the restart of the season, I don't think referees will have a problem in coming back out and finishing off the season.
Let's take a few steps back now, Bob. We were edging towards the halfway point of the season. I know coming into 2020 in particular, the Referees Association was keen on developing younger referees, bringing them up through the schools league program and into the premiership. We've seen a number of the newer referees getting extended time in the Premier League. Are you happy with the development of the next bunch of referees, particularly as you know, have a schools program fully entrenched?
Yes. Well, the schools program is a new initiative that we started last year. We had another program set for this year, but that we will now have to look at that as it relates to how we can fit it in for the remainder of the year. I'm hoping that we can still do it because it's an excellent program. However, most of the referees who are going to come out of this program will not be ready to come right into the Premier League. We will have to do a lot of training and get them turning up to do their technical training, their fitness training, and their video analysis, and all the other areas that go along in making a top-class referee. We have an issue, and I've always stated it, that we have an issue that most of the referees in our Premier League are at an older age than we would have liked. We need to have some young blood in the Premier League. We need to have some new referees coming in to augment the Premier League, because football is a fast sport. It is a sport where you are seeing a lot of younger players being involved in it, and the referees have to be younger, they have to be fitter, they have to be smarter to really go out there and carry out their duties at the highest level. It is our hope that over the next few years, we will get younger people interested in becoming referees out of the colleges, the Harrison College, St. Michael, Parkinson, all the secondary schools, the Polytechnic, the Police Force, the Defense Force, any of those organizations that have young people who want to have a career in refereeing, because refereeing now is going to be a career. You have been hearing recently that there's a possibility there may be a Caribbean professional league. Therefore, if there's a Caribbean professional league, they're going to need professional referees to participate in that league. And therefore, I would like Barbados to be able to be producing referees as to the caliber that they will be able to go into the Caribbean Professional League and to be able to officiate and to be able to make a living out of officiating. So my hope is that we will get some younger people coming into refereeing. We will be doing programs over the next coming months and into next year to get people to come out, young people to come out and become involved in refereeing. And it is my hope that over the next couple of years, we will see a higher caliber of officiating from our younger referees.
Okay, thank you very much. That's Mark Bobford, the BFA's referee manager. And he actually got my last question before he got there. The thoughts on the upcoming Caribbean Professional League. Extremely a magnificent initiative to keep our best players in the region and develop a whole host of young, talented players, not just from Urban, but all around the Caribbean. Thanks once again to Mark Bobford.
Hardworking servant of football. Thanks again, Bob. In our final segment today, Curtis, we are going to head to the middle of the country, St. George, and say good evening in our club segment. We're featuring the Ellerton Club this evening, and I believe we have on the line Corey Barrow. Good evening, Corey.
Good evening, Paul.
And welcome to Penalty Spot.
Yes, really blessed to be here.
Same to you. And this evening, Ellerton takes the spotlight, a club that has since coming into the top flight of football, has really done well. I want to take you, Corey, back to the early days. How did this all start for Ellerton?
All right. This club started really one of the original founding members. It was me and two other guys, Raul Johnson and Jamal Jardine. Right. We formed this club out of a necessity to get to play football, because I mean, it's water on the bridge, you know, but the water fellas were the private that was really, you know, expressing us that we get into play. Though we believe it is not being fought.
We were so convinced that we believe we were better than some of them. So, I myself, you know, coming from a large on them, I think all know the organization, get these certain things in order. You see, we decided to form our team, and our first manager was Harold Tharp. And from those early days, the average age of our team was very, very, very young. It was actually 18, 19. I think only like two fellas, which is Rod Johnson and Stephen Howell actually over 20. Right? We were a young team, eager to play. And for the time we actually started in 1996, but officially our first BFA season was in 1997. And in those years, that was the last year of fourth division. So we actually played that whole season unbeaten. Actually, the only match we lost that season was against Cosmos on Spike Stone. I think Cosmos was a very strong team. And we actually got called to the best. As you remember, the term best that Randy used to organize. The creme of the creme of football teams would be chosen and picked. And Allison was actually the first and last four division team that actually played the best. And from there, we just progressed and developed. And we always was a team that encouraged youngsters. You know, our team over the years, we never had overloaded old stages, not really disrespecting them, but we always encourage you from young as 14 playing with the big boys. So those days, and football during the years have grown so much friendships and associations, and a lot of great players come to Allison, I must say.
So, Corey, as we look at the Ellerton team as it has evolved now, you're sticking close to your roots in terms of youth. You still have one of the youngest teams in the league. I mean, when you look at the team, sometimes these guys have been playing for 3-4 seasons, 2021. What's been the secret of attracting all this young talent over the years?
You're listening to Penalty Spot. I believe we've had a break in our connection. We're going to link up with the guys again as we come into the final stages of the program.
Want to apologize for the break in transmission. As you know, those things go technically sometimes, but we're back and we're trying to get Corey Barrow. He's been talking about the Ellerton Club and the featured club this evening, Ellerton out of St. George, and one of the segments that we've been featuring over the past few weeks since we started the program. And each week we'll be looking at another of our outstanding clubs here in Barbados.
I think you've got Corey back with you now, Paul.
Okay, so Corey, welcome back. Sorry for the break in transmission.
That's how it happens.
Yeah, we've been talking about we were moving on, in fact, to the top flight. Curtis had asked the question in relation to the club sticking to that young cadre of players, and you can talk about that, and also you can also look at that first year up in the top flight. What was it like?
Hello,
is Corey still with us?
Hello,
yes, Corey, you can go ahead.
No, this is.
Okay, Paul, I think we got Corey back on the line.
Yes, good evening again, Corey. You're going to take one more shot at it?
Yeah, for sure, man.
Seems like COVID on the line.
Yeah, correct.
Having some problems, yes.
I didn't even hear Curtis, what Curtis play was.
He was asking in relation to the club sticking to and attracting lots of young players, and you can also look at that, and also what was it like that first year back, up in the top flight in the Premiership?
You mean our last promotion in the Premier League?
First promotion.
The first time. All right. Well, we got to do passport to be present. So maybe do we pass first, right? That first time, that was one of the greatest moments. Not only I, but the hard fans and the passionate players. You know, the first thing Jarsay to get premiership. I remember. Remember the little man going to school at Lodge? We had Marvin, that was Marvin back then. And Marvin or LNC, no, sorry, LNC. And we had to play Benfica and Brendan Silva. I'll never forget. Two last matches. And I think we just wanted a draw. That look, I'll never forget. Well, the Benfica match, that referee, it was Dong's passing sauce. He was very bad. But we didn't win that match. And then from the stadium, you know, we played Brendan Silva. I had a pen against, I think it's John Henry, his name. And I was missing next year, they were gone Brendan Silva. So this day we just thought without him, that's worth a lot. But I think the fans were pissed. So it was a joy, you know, after that hard work. Because, and I mean, it's not about me, it's about the team. But for me personally, I tell you, know, and not only because of the founding member and the first captain, but to go from really to play a top flight, it was I can't describe that feeling that I was there. You know what I mean? To say it was a young club too. It was a very young, not only young in age, but young as in registered. Right? So we have a form, but we really spend a little time and then we make straight through. So tell you Paul, I can't describe that feeling. It's gonna pass me in a lot of. You know what I mean? That was the dream. You know, to carry a team there, and the fans were right leading. And for then on we all, you know, soon we all get a lot of household names. But stressing by the youth now too, before we go any further, let me get a discussion if you're right. We always attract youngsters, and we've got a good coaching staff. We have Alvin Gaiman, all of that. I must certainly come in because he really can't be there. I was elected because it was just some personal issues and had some little family things and other things, and he really hold it for. You know, he's been sitting with Iceland and Tamar Seward, management, and all this man that I still. And put my name would be the name, but then it might be the team that you really be doing the work too. You know, I met at Sharon. Yeah, but we always had a reputation in encouraging youngsters. And it started basically, I was here from inception. But I remember when we went to Barbados Cup, most of the youngsters we actually get from the Barbados Cup. Right? Mm-hmm. I coach on the 19th in Barbados Cup. So every year we play Barbados, I was always dropping a youngster or two, and that youngster too can know another youngster. So we always breathing. And Ellison was always about young, vibrant players. Always. So that's saying that we always talk. If you tell me future fall, we're going to talk about youth. So that's one of our biggest assets, that we always got a lot of youth and talented youth like that.
Corey, Ellison is a club that comes out of the heart of the community.
Yeah, for real. That's true. Right now, the football is like, you know, UNEF. Being realistic, even if up the road and we were down the road, you know what I mean? When football playing, all is one. You know what I mean? And football is growing. You hold the old, the young, everybody. That's one thing I must see. And it's come from that village concept because this boy ain't got a cousin, that boy ain't got the mother, you know? And that's the spit on that behavior on them, but that's saying that we got really enhanced and really build back this boy with the football. You know that community spirit, you know what I mean? Got teams
yes.
Really want to watch the team to play, you know? Yeah, because it's hard economically to pay every Sunday, you know, but it's still support the game. But me personally, simply want two games completely, you know, on a community level, you know, it ain't going to be the whole season. And we get where we're coming from. Mm-hmm. Let's play one or two games and build that vibe. Because I'm not going to football, because I do on this track. They got men that are their fans that never get to see, ain't get to see Alistair Bale play in the Premier League.
Okay.
Because they have any resources all the time. Don't get to come and see him play. So the few times you got, you know, hope matches and thing, you know, playing home, you know, you see that very much. But football is the biggest thing about it, as much as people want to accept it. I mean, KRS got a big one-off growth. You see with the demographics and the big average. So we need to be a bit trying to see what we need to think, but it ain't going to be over anything, but we can make it happen, man. Football's such a joy.
Finally, Corey, looking toward the future, how do you see the future for the Ellerton Club?
I didn't tell you, Paul. I see a bright future. Bright future. We do. Sometimes it gets to the stage that we don't even produce that much serious pay for young players. But because of our product at Ellerton, right? A lot of young talent players, even like, I've got fellas like, tell me season before, yeah, being next season, I can't have another year. I run that man, like Jill, like Paul, like Rock Boy. You know what I mean? You know, this boy's young. This boy got a good 10 years conversation for football ahead of him. So, young, I say a break, I have to be playing football. I know if you're playing on a coffee, I'd be confident. You know what I'm saying? And the thing about it now is that this my few clubs that. This is a big enough for all that. He's been highly playing Premier League now. He has been Premier League at 15 years old. Yeah, Shaquan Clark, that now I feel like he was playing with the big boys from a teenager. And Mario Drake, that's all. It's always generating youth and keep youth accepted, not that you just want them to be set up. Let them feel appreciated. Let them know their presence is appreciated and their ability and their input. Their input is really needed and critical. You know, because, honestly speaking, coming from a black man, a street man, you know, football is the biggest avenues for just be out for, you know, all the trouble and the focus that we got to do, too. For real. Because I can tell we thought we lost a good set of skillful youngsters in football already. 2-1 way or the other. Lose interest or whatever. So, you know, I'm going to go get these boys up. I keep the youth tournaments running and things. School league football, must. Got to give kudos to the Barcelona School League because, as a matter of fact, all these players got to get going through the secondary school league to actually going to play for the Premier League and the big clubs. Mm-hmm. And we in Barbados, a lot of people don't really recognize or appreciate the effort and the time that the secondary school league is putting. Not only because on the board and they coach at large too, but at any day, check the majority size, especially youngsters. This boy was at large, this boy was at St. Leonard's, this boy was at CP, Alexandra, and the draft in the squads. So, in a nutshell, I can see Ellerton doing one of the things. I even seen the Capelli there. Oh, he made finals. Unfortunately, one moment of madness, lost the finals. Other things I must add, but I can't see on the radio. Right? But, right? But, you know what we earned? One of them, I say, we earned respect of every football club in Barbados.
Thank you.
One thing, and let's tell you something, we want to see it. Nobody can stop Ellerton from getting our score opportunities. That's to put them away.
That is so true, Corey. We want to thank you so much if the theme comes up in the background for joining us. And we want to wish Ellerton all the best in the future. Thanks for joining us and being part of our Club Corner this evening. That's the voice of Corey Beanie Man Barrow. And we want to say special thanks also to our other special guest this evening, Kenneth. We also had a player profile with Horace Regal Stout. And, of course, Mark Bob Ford also stopped in to talk about a little bit of the changes in football. That has been our program for this evening. We want to thank you very much for joining us on The Penalty Spot. Be with us again next week, Monday, 6:15, for more from the world of football. On behalf of Curtis Hines, I'm Paul Mears. Have a great evening.